This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
It's 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon. My name's Jacob.
Well, I must be Mercedes then. And we're on Community Radio 3CR with Friday Rave.
And that's right, you're with Friday Rave. It's Friday 19th of September. I'm Mercedes, and back in the studio, on the virtual studio, we've got Jake.
Yep, g'day everybody. I'm out here in the bush, in the thumping pig.
Out in the thumping pig again. So yeah, haven't been to the studio for a few weeks, but you are tuned to 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM. You might be listening at all the W's at 3cr.org.au via 3CR Digital. Or listening back, and I think you've been getting some podcasts up.
Yeah, but I still need to do some work on them, so sorry, everyone.
Oh, that's all right. We'll get there.
I just had a call from someone, from a regular listener on the central coast of New South Wales I haven't heard from for a very long time. G'day, Brian.
Oh, lovely.
Complaining that the podcasts weren't up to date.
Oh, okay.
So we will do that.
We will do that. Well, it does seem like every Friday rolls around, and even though we do it on a Friday, the most update news, it's still not up to date, because every time we sit down and go, all right, what are we going to talk about this week? And there's just so much.
And I realised I had this shocking realisation that actually set me down in the dumps quite a bit of just how naive I've been. Even I, naive is not an adjective I would normally put to myself, but even I, seeing what they're doing now, seeing what they're stating openly, even I could not have come up with this bullshit 2 years ago.
Mm.
It's unbelievable. There's words, we've gone beyond words, which means in some extent we've gone beyond radio. There's no words to say what we're feeling right now.
Yeah.
But we'll do our best.
We will do our best indeed. We're going to kick off this week. There's a few things we've had to narrow it down. But this week, so I'm sure we've spoken about it on the show before, but the new age restriction guideline or laws that are coming in, the actual bill escapes me at the moment, but that's coming in this year in December, and it's basically a regulatory framework and, sorry, a legal framework rather, to ban social media from major providers like Google, Meta, TikTok, and the YouTube and the like for persons under 16. And so just this week, there was the government released, or rather the eSafety Commissioner, released the social media minimum age regulatory guidance. Yeah, so I was having a read through of this, and it sort of sets out it's a guidelines or ways in which they're able to, well, they're not really, these laws aren't really enforceable. There is a fine, but of how these providers, like these, the biggest tech companies in the world, how they should go about age verification and the processes that they look at. And they don't say that necessarily any one is better than the other. Of course, there's data privacy laws in Australia. And so the big part of that is the government is trying to say, in order for these companies not to breach data privacy laws, fat chance, is that, to go through these different processes of guidelines. And so there's a few. One of those is government identification. One of those is, like what I'm going to have a little chat about now, is the use of third-party vendors in this. And so,
and that's the important one.
And that, I think there's a lot in there that is important, but I think the use of the third-party vendors is what was the thing that stuck out to me in the first reading. And so the report says, this is a quote, "A provider of an age-restricted social media platform may rely on a contracted third-party vendor as an alternative. Providers may also consider other age signals or information, such as from other services in the technology stack or across the digital ecosystem. regardless of whether age assurance is in-house or third party, and where age assurance occurs in the technology stack, digital ecosystem, or user journey, the obligation to take reasonable steps is on the provider of the age-restricted social media platform. Providers should consider the availability of independent accreditation and/or evaluation and the potential exacerbation of scam risks for end users.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, the government is saying in these guidelines, Google, Meta, well, Alphabet, Meta, which controls Instagram, Facebook, there's TikTok, YouTube, all of these companies, it's up to them basically to ensure and verify these third parties. But what seems to be missing is that data is a massive economic resource, and it's not just for intelligence surveillance, but also like selling user data for targeted ads. Every time you click something on Instagram, then that data gets sold, creates maps of why you get targeted ads. And so what is going to emerge out of this, and what is already emerging, but new markets in independent, quote unquote, third-party age verification that will assure user accounts aren't deactivated are going to emerge. And they're going to, because they don't have the legal framework or the potential of the fine, there's going to be less safeguards on the data retention and the supposed scrutiny that the major providers are going to be under as a part of the bill, which is still nothing. You know, I'll talk about that in a little while. So these companies, these third-party vendors, are able to bypass Australian data privacy laws and sell that data to the major providers. The large tech companies can avoid any legal scrutiny and possible fines by going, oh, we got the data from this third-party service. And so because the third-party data stores are a profit-driven enterprise, they're not going to have user security as their priority. There's an increased risk of breaches. They can just have a company that folds and then opens up somewhere else. And when the big tech providers fail to adhere, they'll cop a slap on the wrist for the breaches, and it'll just become more viable to outsource age verification. And so how we see this, and a big part of what these guidelines, you know, we've spoken about in the show before, about these sweeping measures that will require everybody to provide their information and their data in order to determine age verification. But I think there's also another element to that in terms of these third-party vendors, you know, in terms of campaigns, and to assure your account remains active, upload all of your details here, give us all of your details. And, you know, you can imagine how many people are going to fall into that. And so this bill is going to be creating new markets, and it already is. And so the third-party verification and the adherence to those data privacy laws is up to the famously trustworthy companies like Meta and Google. Google, remembering, is a company that in 2015 they removed the term "don't be evil" from their code of conduct.
Yeah, so it's like, I mean, it's okay. Most companies don't have "don't be evil" in their code of conduct. But if you do have it and you're removing, it's basically giving people carte blanche to be evil.
Yeah. Well, they say that Alphabet kind of said, you know, it was in preference to Alphabet's code of conduct that said do the right thing. But so another major point out of this is the algorithmic bias. The tests for the age verification that formulated the basis for this, for these regulatory guidelines, were done by an independent UK-based mob. AASC, I can't remember the exact acronym, but The Guardian released an article about it today from Digital Rights Watch, with that name in it. But so the tests for age verification, in these tests, highlighted that there's racial bias specifically for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander and South Asian people within the tests that they conducted and the age verification tests. And so with speaking of the almost definite use of third-party identification platforms for the social media age ban, they'll be collecting data on underage users to verify their accounts. and on miners. And so AI and machine learning platforms like Microsoft Insights or Cognitech Systems may be ones that are already in use. And so Microsoft Insights works not on facial recognition, but on voice location and behavioral analysis, which is one of the guidelines of that it's being used in terms of machine AI and machine learning to determine age, whereas Cognitech Systems is facial recognition technology. So earlier this year, New South Wales Police have been found to be using this what this regulatory guidelines calls a waterfall analysis for predictive policing. And
can you just say that phrase again?
The New South Wales Police earlier this year have been found to be using Microsoft Insights voice location and behavioural analysis AI technology and Cognitech Systems facial recognition technology for predictive policing.
Right. Okay.
There was an inquiry and that was done in February of this year, and so New South Wales Police has been using this predictive policing methods for a long time. Predictive policing has been underpinning, but they're using this facial recognition technology, and what's come out of the use of these particular systems, and in particular Cognitech Systems, is intense racial prejudice towards First Nations and West African people.
Right.
At a difference of, I think, 100 to 10, 10, a 90% variable. So
right.
That in and of itself, yeah.
So just on that, it's bad enough. Of course, I'm not minimising that it's that people with, because of their ethnicity, different facial features, will be less likely to be aged appropriately, whatever. It's not just race; it's class as well. Mm. Because I remember my own lad using the VPN to play video games as if he was based in the United States.
Mm.
All right. Now, any 15-year-old kid from relatively middle-class home in Australia is going to be able to log into their VPN and pretend they're in a country where they haven't got those same restrictions. But it's going to be the poor people who access the computer at libraries and who access the computer at school and various other, homework groups, for example, who are going to be caught up in this. It's not only race targeted, it's class targeted.
Mm. And the use of tools in their own tests that they've put this regulatory frameworks and tried to obfuscate the racial bias or the biases within their own tests of the analysis that they've already done and yet are pushing ahead with it. And so I guess that these same platforms, Microsoft being a massive company, Cognitech Systems obviously already having whatever they need to be used within law enforcement, these are the same platforms that have verification tools that are going to use those same data sets that are made available to the other service. So how am I trying to frame this? These same companies being employed as contracted as third-party vendors for this specific age verification tools and analysis as a requirement of this bill increases the data sets that will then be made available to other services like Google and Meta and AI and to other law enforcement. And so the result will be increased data sets of more information that is then becoming and being made available to law enforcement in already over-policed communities and feeding into those predictive models of policing. So in claiming to protect young people, the Australian government legislation is opening up more young people to targeting because of the increase of data sets, because of this third-party vendor system, which is legislated as a part of this bill.
Yeah, and look, the other point I want to raise, Mercedes, is that the age verification system is basically flawed. As you've so rightly pointed out, their own research says that they can't do it particularly very well, and they can't do it across ethnicities. And as I said, it's not going to involve class. But here's the point. Even if it were perfect, even if they open your camera and they see your face and they say, geez, this kid isn't 16 years old until next Tuesday, even if they work that and it's 100% all the time, what are they going to stop our kids accessing? I mean, I'm old enough now to remember all the world is going to end when things like South Park and The Simpsons come on TV. And I remember when kids at school, in primary school, were being told. I mean, I went to a Catholic school and a letter went home to all families saying they shouldn't watch this show and we shouldn't be allowed to watch that show. Restricting information to young people is not going to help. It's people who are looking up information about gender issues. It's people, what they say they're going to stop information about, you know, that promotes anorexia and bulimia, for example. Now, it might be a kid looking up how to deal with this because of their mate. It's not just because someone's looking up a topic that they're then going to, you know, what's the word? Then going to sort of like
take
go
it on board
and do something stupid.
It becomes it is massive health, you know, health risks and psychological risk for young people who might not have other ways to access the information that they need for themselves.
Yeah, and again, particularly from people who have, let's just say, different cultural backgrounds to your white Australian and what is seen as the norm in this society, who may be less able than our kids, my kids, to go to their parents or uncles or aunts and talk about particular sexual or drug or food issues. You know, people with from strong religious backgrounds, for example. I mean, it's even if it worked properly, stopping information, the flow, the question surely is not about controlling the flow of information. The question is about educating our young people to deal with information appropriately. And dare I say, educating our older people, everybody, in dealing with information appropriately.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I guess, you know, we've only got about 10 minutes left, so we should... move on. But I guess there's a lot in this bill, and Digital Rights Watch have put in... submissions, but also, you know, in terms of what this means, you know, for young people, it's not going to do anything for the tech. Like the tech companies, this is kind of more just like an annoying blowfly in the window that just arcs up every now and again, but not worth getting up out of your seat off, you know. $49 million fine works out to about 0.049 of Alphabet's profits from last year. That's if there's even
so it'd be like,
even it, if it, it is enforceable. So it's just collecting more data and creating a new market and helping the models and the machine learning and AI models to develop their technology further, because that's the way that this technology generates.
Because the fine, to put it in terms we can understand, as big as it sounds when you say it quickly, it's when you see it as a percentage of income, it's about the same as you or I getting a fine for overstaying our parking space or 10 kilometres over the speed limit or something like that. It hurts. I'm not saying it's nothing, but that's where it is. But look, in the few minutes we've got left, I just want to, if I can, change the subject completely and go over to Gaza.
Yeah.
Or rather, go over to the United States, where there's a new bill, the War Reserve Stock for Allies Israel, or WRSAI, is being introduced, and it will get through because it's got bipartisan support, to increase the secretive weapon sales that don't need to have any public scrutiny that are being sent to Israel. All right, now, in the United States, I mean, that's always the case here. There's no public scrutiny on arms exports. In the United States, there is limited public scrutiny. You can go onto their website and look it up yourself.
Does it go through Congress and it has to go through Congress if it's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it's contentious at all, it has to go through Congress. Now, with the Democrats and Republicans, they're tweedledee tweedledum every much as our own two are. And so it very, very rarely gets commented on. But what it's going to do is waive any restrictions on the value and type of US weapons transferred to Israel or other allies each year. All right. Now, up until now, it was $200 million annually, the secretive sales. But now it's open slather. So there's no way of knowing what the US is sending to Israel. Now, here's the part that affects you and I. Because of the Defence Export Trade Amendments Bill, which we've carried on about for a long time on this little radio show, we have no way of knowing, and no one has any way of knowing, what's going to the United States. Mm-hmm. And the United States is now treating Australia as domestic source, domestic product. So basically anything can go from here to Israel through the United States on paperwork, but not necessarily in reality, with no way of knowing, with no way of checking. Nobody in the world has any way of checking what is being sent to Israel. This is outrageous. And now that now that they've proved their total ineffectiveness by saying 2 years or 24 months after this has been going on that it is in fact genocide, but we can do nothing about it. I mean, why sit on this radio so 2015, when they started using the word global rules-based order, 10 years ago, I was saying what this is about is making the United Nations irrelevant.
Yeah.
And that's what they've done.
Yeah.
The global rules-based order, America, AUKUS, has made the UN irrelevant. And now they're so irrelevant that they can say this country is committing genocide and the United States says, great, we will send whatever weapons we like with no public scrutiny, much more than we ever have in the past. We'll take off all restrictions to Israel to help, and Australia will say, we're with you all the way, because that's what they're saying. We're with you all the way. Well, they're not openly saying that, but enacting that piece of legislation into law, that's what they've done. Mm. And this, even if it's true, even if we get nuclear submarines in 10 years' time and we save our manufacturing industry and we employ 50,000 people and send kids to school, all kinds of STEM, even if that's true, and it is all bullshit, is that something we're willing to be complicit in genocide for? I don't know about our government, but I would argue not.
No, absolutely not. And not to mention that in terms of the US and the UN Security Council, and if there's any wanting to engage to stop the ongoing genocide, a veto power from the UN in that.
Yeah.
They can just go, no.
Let's go, no. There's nothing they can do. There's nothing they can do. And there's nothing the General Assembly can do or wants to do. Let's face it, they don't want to. Every country, individually and collectively, can say, nah, that's it. Fuck is. We don't want to be a part of this. And therefore, we're not going to supply the United States. We're not going to supply Israel. And we're going to recall ambassadors and all the rest of it. But nobody's going to want to do that.
Mm.
Australia's not going to want to do that. No one's going to do it because genocide's profitable, my friends.
Yeah. So we do have a couple minutes left, but we might end on that note and make sure that everybody gets out to the rally this Sunday, the 21st at 12 p.m. at the State Library, where the focus is on the West Bank, because it's not just in Gaza, but it's also in the West Bank. in the encroachment of the West Bank, where there's the increase of assassinations and bombings, and as there's a ground invasion, the next ground invasion ready to go into Gaza. It's happening in the West Bank as well. So get out to the rally this Sunday at 12 o'clock.
Spring equinox, the International Day of Peace.
Mm.
Who'd believe it?
Who'd believe it? Let's get out there, be loud, and we will catch you next week. This has been a Friday rave. Stay locked on. You're Jacob. Sorry.
I'm Jacob.
Yeah. I'm Mercedes. Keep it on 3CR 855 AM for Slacker Radio. The good folks will be coming into the studio soon, and we will catch you next week.